You're listening to the Loyalty Minute, the show that helps you build better customer loyalty and more valuable user engagement with your host, Rob Gallo.
Welcome, loyal listeners, to another episode of the Loyalty Minute. I'm your host, Rob Gallo, and today I'm eager to chat with our special guest, Caroline Boyd. Caroline is the head of strategy and planning, as well as customer loyalty for MassMutual Workplace Services, and she truly believes that there is such a thing as the customer service gene. Welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thanks, Rob. I'm delighted to be here.
So, a customer service gene. Tell me about genetics.
Well, I think, you know, it's very hard to teach people to care, right? So I can teach you about retirement plans. I can teach you about financial services. I can teach you how to work our technology, but it's hard for me to teach you to care. So I find that people who are excellent customer service professionals and who choose to make it their living frequently have demonstrations going far back. So for example, my mother tells me, I don't remember this, but my mother tells me that when I was three, I said that I wanted to be a part-time waitress and a part-time nurse. And my mom said, well, that's an interesting combo. Why is that? And I said, because they both help people. And I think, you know, you're just born that way. You want to help people. I'm sure your environment and your nurturing plays a role, but you grow up wanting to help people. And I think that sticks around in adulthood. It does drive my husband a little crazy at times because I tend to, help people in the supermarket and things like that, or people who are looking for directions, and he sees it as slowing us down. But
yeah,
I do believe it's innate. You can help people get better at it, but there is a customer service DNA.
I hear you. So for those loyal listeners who don't know who you are and what you're all about, if you could just share maybe a quick background, a quick story about yourself.
Sure. Well, clearly, given my belief, I hope that I demonstrate to my customers and my internal partners that I have that customer service gene. As you mentioned, I'm the head of strategy planning and customer loyalty for MassMutual Workplace, and we do retirement plans and protection products that are distributed through employers. So we work with advisors, we work with employer HR departments, we work with third-party administrators, and we are part of MassMutual's overall purpose to help people secure their futures and protect the ones they love. And that purpose really, you'll see it run throughout our entire company. Most of the people who've chosen to work here because they believe in that purpose and they want to be connected to something great. I got here, I started out actually as an HR person at a bank in Dallas after college. And then I thought, well, I'll go and I'll pick up some other HR disciplines like retirement plans and compensation. So I went to what was then called the Wyatt Company. It's now Willis Towers Watson, and got retirement plans. And after that, I was going to move on to what was then the Hay Company. They're now Korn Ferry, and get compensation. But I loved retirement plan work so much that I stayed in consulting at Wyatt for 4 years. And then I went on to Ernst & Young to manage their defined contribution practice for the DC area, and then ultimately doing national retirement account escalation work. So basically, if clients were ticked off anywhere around the country, I would fly there and try to get them unticked off, which I found extraordinarily rewarding. And after that, I went to Fidelity. I was at Fidelity for about 10 years. I was a relationship team manager and then site manager. And then I went into marketing and I was the marketing head for the mid-market. And I also ran the market research group for the part of Fidelity that does retirement plans.
Wow.
Then I decided, and here's where purpose comes into it for me, even before I got to MassMutual. Then I decided that I wanted to do something that was a little more soul food for me. So I decided to quote unquote retire from Fidelity, and I went to the Animal Rescue League of New Hampshire as the CEO. And, you know, so that's a huge change from, tens of thousands financial services company to a small shelter that has been run grassroots since about 1900. And they're trying to turn into a more professional service organization and help more animals, companion animals, get adopted. So I was there for about 5 years. Then a contact of mine, my favorite boss from Fidelity, contacted me to say she had gone to TIAA, which was then TIAA-CREF, mm-hmm. who has the retirement plans for much of the nonprofit higher education market, you know, the Harvard, Yales of the world. And I went there as the chief operating officer, and I also did a lot of marketing communications and internal communications because I just love people, so I like to spend as much time as I can, you know, sort of helping them, right? And then finally, ended up here at MassMutual. Both TIA and MassMutual are purpose-driven companies. And, you know, never say never, but my intention is never to go back to another type of organization that is not mission-based or purpose-based.
Wow. That's quite a storied past for sure. And speaking of stories, so one of the things that we do here on the podcast is we try to answer the questions in the form of a story. So what we found is that generally speaking, people have more context and concrete understanding about a story than they do about abstract numbers and statistics. So based on that, it again, is historic past that you've been in the industry. What I wanted to ask you first is, what does customer loyalty mean to you as a consumer? How do you feel about it?
Well, customer loyalty to me, and you know, this is coming from a service industry, which is a little different. I know a lot of times customer loyalty focuses on retail or and loyalty programs per se or hospitality, but in financial services, it is a little bit different. So to me, it means two key things, and that's why creating an experience where a customer would at the end of the day say, why would I ever want to be anywhere else? And if you can create that, you have a customer for life. And I think the second part of it is that that customer then becomes an advocate for you. So it's not just that, you know, you say, can I use you as a reference? And they say yes, right? It's that they're out talking to their friends and their neighbors about the experiences that they've had. And if they're at conferences, they're telling people, oh, you've got to go to MassMutual. They're so fantastic. That's really what customer loyalty is to me.
So could you think of a specific example for a company that you're loyal to, whether it's Starbucks or Apple or Best Buy, Walmart, for whatever reason, and the reason that you would be loyal to that company?
Sure. I do have some different brands, that I am loyal to. But there are a couple of stories that pop to mind that I'd like to share. So one is that recently, with regard to Hilton Hotels, the Hilton family of hotels, they've gone to a series of digital experiences where it's taken all of the inconvenience out of it, for me anyway. So I think that there are really two key drivers of loyalty. One is trust, because if you break trust, you have a really hard time creating or maintaining loyalty. And the second one is ease of doing business. So with the Hilton app on my phone, also connected to my my application at work, through which I have to book my travel, I book my travel online. It shows up in my Hilton app. I check in online. I go down there and I say I want a digital key. So I bypass the check-in desk. I, you know, go to my room. I'm just in the room overnight because I usually have pretty packed days when I'm traveling. So I'm in the room overnight, and then when I'm ready to go, I check out on my phone. My receipt shows up both in my email and on my app, and it shows up in my travel program at work as an electronic receipt. And boom, my expenses are done. So it's a real ease of doing business. They've made it very easy for me to choose their chain of hotels.
So convenience is probably what I get out of that story, is that making it super simple.
Yep, and fast, right? Yeah. I'm not standing in lines to check in or check out.
Yep.
So and on also, the flip you side. can't lose your key, right? If you have your phone, you have your key.
Exactly. I mean, everything is going digital to that degree. And I had a funny story. We looked to start another company, my daughter and I, and we looked at a company in New York that was called Long Island Loyalty. It was a neat concept. They had a coalition loyalty platform where you could, there was about 250 merchants in the platform. where you could buy something from one store and then get 10% stored on this stored value card, an old-fashioned swipe card. And I thought, why isn't this digital? Everyone has their phone. And we just couldn't come to terms with the owner, so we ended up building our own platform. But that's a story for another time. But in that context of saying simplicity, convenience, and ease for your customer to interact with your brand is paramount when it comes to loyalty. That's going to keep loyalty.
I agree. Yeah. I'd love to tell you a story, though, about an experience I had at the Four Seasons.
Shoot.
When I was traveling with Fidelity, one of the things we were doing is we were looking at changing to a new customer relationship management system. And the gentleman who ran our shared services group was in charge of the project, and he'd been reviewing and site visiting, and you know, and he was trying to create a CRM that meant all things to all people, right? And he was talking about the IT infrastructure we were going to need and the digital aspects and so on and so forth. So he and I traveled to Dallas for a meeting, and we checked in to the Four Seasons at the same time. And the he walked up to the desk, and the desk clerk said to the receptionist, said to him, good afternoon, Mr. Singh. Welcome back. And he said, how? Because he'd never seen that desk clerk. He said, how did you know that I had come back? You haven't even pulled up a computer screen yet, because he's, you know, way in this digital mindset, right? And the receptionist at the desk said, you remember when the porter helped you with your bags outside? He asked you, have you ever stayed with us before? And you said yes. So he walked in behind you. He holds up one finger for yes, two fingers for no. Absolutely nothing to do with a computer system.
Huh.
I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, the human
and
touch.
Fantastic. It worked every time, right?
Yeah. That's
humans are never down. Computers go down.
That's true. So it really speaks to the corporate culture, though. I mean, obviously, you're paying at the Ritz-Carlton a higher price than you would be at the Holiday Inn. No disrespect to Holiday Inn. But again, the training of the staff, it's like Nordstrom's compared to Macy's. The people that are behind the counter that make up that culture understand the value of human interaction. And I think, at least at the corporate level, and that trickles down to the frontline employees.
Oh, I agree. And I think they feel empowered because, you know, I think it's pretty well known that any frontline employee has the ability to make a concession and comp something up to a certain dollar level. It used to be 200. I don't know what it is now. So you don't have to wait for a manager and you don't have to do all that sort of stuff. And I think that, you know, that speaks to what you're talking about. It's a corporate culture. It comes from the top. The employees are empowered to act on it. There's a whole service chain in action there.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this thing. Can you think of a story, success or failure, from a customer loyalty enhancement strategy that your listeners or that the listeners would find helpful, meaning from your existing or past businesses that you think might fit into this category as well?
Sure. I think...
And sometimes you can learn more from failures than you can from successes, meaning things that just explode. Sometimes you could pick apart the difference and see where something went wrong.
Yes, I think you can. And I think that, you know, sort of the moral to the story I'm about to tell you is custom isn't always better. And if I think back to one of my prior experiences, I will not name the employer. We had a customer relationship management system that had been so over-architected that in order to get any tiny change, it was thousands, if not millions of dollars of IT hours to get the change. And in reality, it had been architected into such a Frankenstein that it was not performing the activities that they were hoping it would perform when they customized it. And if you sort of tracked back to the original CRM product, it would have covered 95% of what we needed. So I think that over-architecting was an example of a failure, a customer loyalty failure, because it was not at all nimble or agile. We had to have multiple systems up in front of people for them to really know their customer, because I think, you know, bottom line for customer loyalty, you need to know, respect, and value your customer, and you need to be able to show it. And knowing your customer is a big part of that. I mean, you think of if you go to your physician's office and you get a different physician, but they seem to know you, they've got a system that's telling them these things, as opposed to you get a different physician and they spend the first 15 minutes of your appointment, you know, reading charts and asking you questions you've answered, you know, 10 times before, right?
And that's when you're already half an hour late walking into that little office.
Exactly.
After waiting in the main reading room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm a fan of automation when it's right. Right? There are some things that should be automated. There are some things that should remain human, and don't overbuild, I guess, is my advice coming out of that story.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a thing called feature creep when, you know, you have technology people that are working on all the buttons for a remote control on your TV. And there's probably 45 buttons on my remote. And I use two, the volume and the channel.
Exactly.
Everything else is, you know, it's crazy. Nowadays, actually, the cool thing is you can talk it to your remote. So I just
save. So you don't need to know as much.
Exactly. Just press the little button and say golf channel and I'm done.
Exactly. So it's interesting though, from a product design standpoint. So one of my responsibilities here, and if you think about more traditional jobs, because we MassMutual sort of did away with, you know, chief this and chief that titles. So ordinarily I'd be called a COO or a chief of staff, but so one of the responsibilities I have here at MassMutual for Workplace is diversity and inclusion and making sure that we honor people's differences and act inclusively and value those contributions, right? So that's something that's very important to me. And I was at a webinar, the other day. And have you ever heard of reference man?
No.
In product design, it can be a reference woman or reference child, but there are a lot of studies that talk about reference man. And reference man is who the person had in mind when they created the product. And sometimes it's just a comfort thing, like thermostats are built for the male metabolism, not the female metabolism. Sometimes it's a life or death thing because people learn CPR on mannequins that are more responsive for male bodies than for female bodies. And it's true for gender, it's true for race, it's true for all sorts of dimensions, it's true for disabilities. And one of the examples that they gave about inclusive design, which I think is something that contributes to customer loyalty, was if you think about a staircase going into a building, right, that will prevent people in wheelchairs from going up and down.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you put two ramps, you know, two boards, if you will, on those stairs, envision that. So now the wheelchair can go up and down on those two, you know, rails, for lack of a better term. But inclusive design would suggest that half of the entry is stairs, half of the entry is a ramp, and then people with canes, people with strollers, people with deliveries can use the ramp, right? So you've solved the problem for the person who was originally disadvantaged, but you've also created value for people you weren't even thinking about. And
yeah.
So I think, you know, if anyone listening has product responsibilities, thinking about that, you know, structural inclusion when you're doing product design is critically important to achieving product loyalty on the other end.
That's 100% spot on. I agree, because what we call, I think you said research man?
Reference man.
Reference man. Yeah, what we call reference man is we build customer personas. Who does the customer look like? Because sometimes there might be multiple customers, exactly like you said, and you need to think about how each individual person or groups of people, you can't make it for every single person at scale, of course, but people that fit into certain categories that reach a certain criteria are going to need to be accommodated by your design or look or feel or whatever it is. So yeah, taking that into context, to consideration on the build is super important. And again, you know, customer loyalty to a lot of people at the surface just means a rewards program. I get points, I come back and I spend more points. But it's really way more than that. It's into the brand's thought process, their message, their mission statement, how the corporate culture is, I think that all permeates through to what people become loyal to that organization just for that reason. So I'm not a coffee drinker, but Starbucks probably does one of the best jobs at making people feel included in that group, for lack of a better term, to enjoy their coffee, I suppose. I guess I'm not a coffee
drinker.
Yeah,
I think it they create a culture and it sort of becomes a cult, right?
Yeah. It's just like the Kool-Aid, Jim Jones. For those
although
two.
Although hopefully more positive results.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So let me ask you this. What do, in an ideal world, what does an engagement strategy look like? So when you talk about the future of what you're currently doing now, without giving away any proprietary secrets of what MassMutual is working on, but what does the future of a better customer journey look like?
Well, I think it starts with customer feedback, right? You need, and actually, if you back it up from there, customer experience really starts with employee experience, right? So you need to make sure that you're listening to your employees, not only about their experiences with your customers, so they can tell you what customers like and don't like, but their experiences in trying to serve their customers. So for example, one of the things that we did recently was we wanted to cut down on some turnaround time. And we noticed that in our account management team, things were taking a little longer than we had hoped. So we jumped in and did an assessment. And it turns out that the account managers who were responsible for getting all these answers to all these clients, the account managers could only answer 13% of the questions themselves.
Wow.
The rest of the questions had to be, they needed help from a partner, an IT partner, legal and compliance, the relationship manager, whoever it is, right? But only 13% was in their direct control. So, what we've done is we've tried to reorganize some of the work streams to make that information easier to get and to educate the people on either side of that service chain, sort of up and down the stream, as to what their impact is on the customer experience. Because I think one of the things that's really critical to understand in the service industry is that every single person from the maintenance crew on up to the CEO works for our clients. Whether you have client contact or not, you work for our clients. And so if you can get the people who are in the heart of the house to understand that they affect our clients, you get much better cooperation, much more empathetic value chains and service chains, and just a much better client experience.
Mm. Wow. Yep. All right. Well, let me ask you this. What sort of actionable advice could you share with our listeners that they could implement today to help them attract and retain more customers?
Well, I think, the first thing is listen, right? Listen more than you talk. Mm-hmm. And make sure that you are understanding who your customers are, what they need, right? My 87-year-old mother doesn't want to be serviced the same way that a millennial does. Mm-hmm. She's not a digitally oriented person. She doesn't have a smartphone, right? But somebody in the millennial, or I'm on the tail end of the baby boom, I would much prefer to be served digitally, right? And there are several. My dad loved to do stuff before he passed away. He loved to do stuff online. So know who your customers are and how they like to interact with you. And then make sure that you are lining up to serve them in a way that is economically sustainable, right? Because it doesn't do them any favors if you go out of business.
Right.
And that you have a constellation of feedback. It's not all about surveys, right? Every single interaction with a customer is a point of feedback in that constellation. And it needs to have a closed loop, right? You need to have a way to be able to get back to the customer. And whether that's solving a specific problem or whether that's saying, hey, Rob, you had a great idea the other day about this. And so I went and talked to my product folks and they're going to implement this and it's going in January, right? So whether it's strategic themes or whether it's account remediation or anything in between, you need to have a closed loop. And I think really importantly from a mindset standpoint, you need to serve your customers based on them. So not on your product silos, not on your lines of business, but based on them as a person and how they're experiencing your entire complex, right? So I work in the retirement area. We have folks that work, we call it MMFA, the Mass Mutual Financial Advisors. We need to make sure that our market messages are consistent and that we're, you know, we understand when we have a customer in common, right? So that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. I think, you know, sort of the last thing I would say is it is a privilege to serve. People who are in customer service positions, you know, it's a tough job sometimes, particularly people on the very front lines, but it is an absolute privilege to serve, and you should never take your customer's business for granted. You should always say thank you in a way that's meaningful to them. And, yeah. You know, one of the things, like with Hilton, last time I was staying at a Hilton in Springfield, Massachusetts, and some guy named Bill accidentally charged his room service to my room. So I called them up, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt on the accidentally. So I called them up, and I said, hey, this isn't me. Can you reverse it? And they said, yes, let us look into it and call you back. So they did. And the guy who called me back says, I'm really sorry this happened. It wasn't their fault, because their room service is delivered by a restaurant that's next door to them. So mm-hmm. they just get the tickets from that restaurant and they put it on the bill, right? So they said, I'm really sorry that this happened. Is there anything I can do to make it right? Other than, of course, reverse the charge. I said, no, that's fine. They said, would you like some points in your account? I said, no, I'm good, because I'm not one of those people that's very loyalty point oriented. And he said, well, I appreciate you saying that, but I'm going to put 5,000 points in your account anyway. And I really appreciated that. He didn't have to do that. I'd already told him he didn't have to do that, but it was a really nice gesture for him to do that. And I felt valued as a customer.
Sure.
And I think if you can make people feel valued and keep that, that perspective of gratitude and privilege to serve, that you can't go wrong. When I worked for the Animal Rescue League of New Hampshire, and I'm actually amazed that none of my five dogs at the moment, four of mine and a guest dog, haven't barked during this interview. When I worked at the Animal Rescue League of New Hampshire, they had a thank you program in place for donors, right? But it didn't feel very personal to me. So when I went there as the CEO, I revamped it. And I left the Animal Rescue League to go to TIA in 2007. I was there for 5 years. I left, not in 2007, in 2011. So we're now in 2020. I still run into people in the grocery store who say to me, oh, I loved getting those thank you notes from you. They were handwritten, right? And they always had a picture of animals and how they were helping. And they still say to me to this day, 9 years later, I loved getting those thank you notes. I never get handwritten thank you notes, and I miss those so much. Yeah. And, you know, little things can go a long way if they're authentic and sincere.
Absolutely. So the actionable advice, I think, first off, what you said, something that really hit home with me, is that God gave you two ears and one mouth. Use them in that ratio. I've loved that exactly. saying for a long time. But listening to people's responses through email conversations that your customer service frontline people or chat are having with them is probably 10 times more valuable than survey responses. Because I think people answering surveys are just answering for the sake of, hey, you know, maybe I'll get a free bonus or something. But again, reading through and reading between the lines from the customer service front of what your frontline employees are dealing with when they deal with customers and how they respond is paramount. And that's how you really, I think, set apart your company as a thought leader when it comes to engaging with their customers as they want to be spoken to, in the right methodology and things like that.
Yeah,
great stuff.
I could not agree more. Surveys are important, they matter, right? But they are not the be all end all. And to your point, they are absolutely not the best source of actionable information.
Yeah. Well, Caroline, listen, I think we're about to wrap up our time. And I wanna say I sincerely appreciate you taking your time. I thought the insightful conversation was spot on, and I hope a lot of listeners learned from that. If listeners want to get a hold of you for more information, what's the best way they could do that?
Probably the easiest way is to find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
It's Caroline Boyd, B-O-Y-D, and I am on LinkedIn. You can shoot me a message that way, and that'll come directly to my email. So that's probably the easiest way, and I'm happy if your listeners have any questions or just want to talk about a project, a loyalty project, or anything like that, or I'm also happy to talk about, we have a system in place that I didn't even get to called Mutual Voice that we do with a vendor partner, and they want to talk about that. That's our survey and listening program in real time. I'm happy to share any of that kind of information if they just want to give me a shout.
Well, you could send it over to me. I'll put it in the show notes and a link back to it so they could find it easily.
Okay, sure.
All right, great. Well, I want to thank our loyal listeners for listening and investing some of their valuable time with us. If you feel you received value from the show, we would appreciate a 5-star review on your favorite podcast streaming service. If you think you know someone who else also might value listening from the show, please share the podcast. To reference this and other Loyalty Minute episodes, please visit theloyaltyminute.com. Enjoy.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for your next edition of the Loyalty Minute.